Dave Holmes, hello.
Matt McConkie, you're looking fabulous.
Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm great. I've never been better. We are going to Boston early tomorrow morning. We're going up there for a wedding. And then it turns out, because I was just like, oh, you know, we got a free morning on Saturday morning. And I thought, you know, Holy Cross, where I went to college, it's like 45 minutes away. We'll have a car. I thought, oh, I wonder if it's like a home game, we can go and tailgate. I can show Ben campus. Turns out it's homecoming weekend, A. Oh. B, there is now at this super homogeneous conservative Catholic college, there is now like an LGBT students group and an alumni group, and they are having their own tailgate also, which is absolutely unheard of. So we're going to go and see what that's all about. It might be great. Either way, we'll get to wear sweaters and tweed and, you know, have that experience. But
wonderful.
It's going to be interesting.
They're going to be so excited to see you.
Oh, they won't know who I am. That's fine.
Absolutely, they will.
They absolutely will not know who I am. And that's 100% okay. But it should be nice. It's going to be a nice little getaway for a few hours. And then the game will start and we'll leave.
Well, you know what else is nice?
Is there a segue coming?
The fact that we finally have these two on the show, it's a supersized episode, a very special episode. This is such a long time coming. As usual, they're such an obvious guest that it's almost like it didn't even occur to us to get them. And maybe on some level, I thought we could not get them.
Yeah. And yet.
They are actors and so much more. And they're also a married couple with matching initials. Blakely and Ben Lewis, you've seen them on Arrow, Cruel Summer, Parks and Rec, Insecure. You've seen them together in the Christmas setup, which was Lifetime's first ever queer holiday movie. And now you hear them together on Homophilia. Blake and Ben, hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having us. This is,
thank you for being here.
Maybe we were obvious guests to you, but this was completely, came as a shock and a delight to us.
Also, I have to say that, like, watching you guys talk your intro, when I've listened to your podcast, I'm always like, oh, I wonder, I never thought that people were watching it happen live. I just thought, like, you guys did that separately.
We usually do.
I could have watched that all
that
day.
We would get to
you do.
Yeah, gotcha. That dazzling repartee is usually done separately.
Got it.
Yeah.
But, you know, because it's a special occasion.
Sure.
It is an ongoing discussion, but where there's a little bit of a push and pull, let's say, where I would like to never do that section of the show again in my life.
I could have watched that all day. Truly, I could have watched.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Because as you saw, I have nothing to say. And then I desperately search for something to say, I talk about getting my fucking eyes lasered.
I mean, yes.
Who cares?
People want to know. People want to know that.
Yes.
Inquiring minds want to know. I mean,
thank you. See, yeah. The people have spoken and again. Anyway, Blakely and Ben Lewis, I have to ask, do you know American Idol's Blake Lewis?
Not personally, but it's funny.
But okay. I do have, we have a mutual friend, this actress, Ginger Gonzaga, and she often texts for him. Wow. So I often get his texts. Mm-hmm. But
that makes sense.
But yeah, it's funny that you mention him, because I was thinking about how, Matt, you've changed your last name, right? At least on Instagram, you're to Grassy, right?
Yes, and as usual, I haven't really made a firm decision. Legally, I have changed my last name in my personal life. I think maybe in whatever version of professional life I have, I'm going to kind of stick with McConkie.
Your stage name will remain McConkie. Yeah, I see.
I guess.
Because we had I guess we never really considered taking each other's last names, but one of the reasons for that is if Blake took my last name, he would be Blake Lewis, who is a singer, and if I took Blake's last name, I would be Ben Lee, who was also a singer.
Also a singer,
right?
So
yeah. Wow,
those
what
two,
a conundrum.
Yeah. So there's always a Blakely Lewis and a
Ben Lewis,
Blake Lewis Lee,
or
Ben
Blake Lewis. I mean, we know certain people who've done the combined, but that's just. It's a bit weird.
I have to tell you, I hear Blakely Lewis and what I'm in my head. I'm Blakely Lewis. I'm 17. I'm from Virginia. And I hope to represent my state or whatever. All I see is pageantry.
That's right. You're right. Right.
Sashes.
Which is a reason to do it.
It is.
Which honestly, yeah, no, I'm not. That was not a dig at all. I love that. I also am seeing what is either an Erewhon soup container ice water Erewhon ice water.
It's a soup container. Yeah.
Can you imagine if I just bought ice water by the, it would be $27. Yeah, no, this is kind of, I started in the pandemic with the, you know, the plastic soup, sort of containers,
like a chef,
like real chefs, mm-hmm. Drink out of. Mm-hmm. And, I've since
moved
transitioned.
On to soup.
Yeah.
Soup jars, uh-huh. soup jars.
Which Erewhon, I must ask.
Well, it used to be
West Hollywood, but we've moved to the east side. So now it's the east side.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Oh. Okay.
And are you members?
Are we members? Absolutely not.
Absolutely not, right? But they pressure you every time.
No, because they do.
We really only go
when we're sick.
When we're sick, yeah. Which is why we just have so many of these soup jars, yeah. Because that's like the one thing. I mean, as soon
we
as
we used
I,
to go a lot more, I feel like, in the West Hollywood one. And then it was like, oh, we're going bankrupt. Like this.
Yeah, we've weaned ourselves off a little bit.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare. There's a brand new one near me and I love it so much. But it's also like, it's so fucking expensive.
It's ridiculous.
They have a thing called activated coffee, which is sort of like bulletproof coffee, except it costs like $11.
Yeah,
right. And I love it. I love it.
The activation? What causes the activation?
Like a stick of butter.
It's like a tablespoon of butter.
Okay.
And it's ghee or whatever, which is like clarified butter. And then MCT oil, which has activating properties, apparently, and some sort of protein. And the fact that you part with $11, I think, makes you like personally invest in the experience.
100%. For $11, they should give you the full stick of butter.
They should give you the full stick of butter, just on the side. On the side. Yeah, they ask every time if I'm a member. And it's like all I've been able to get out of them as far as what that entails is that I give them 200 more of my dollars.
Yes.
And then I get points.
Right.
But I don't know what points.
It's a racket.
Oh, it's a total racket. And I love every fucking
thing. I know, me too.
This is why I don't own a house.
Dave, are you still doing a bulletproof, or it's called bulletproof, right? A coffee at home in the morning?
I am.
Every day?
Yeah, I'm doing a little coffee at home in the morning. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, no, great. Great to know. Moving on. Guys, what are you watching these days? What are you loving in the TV realm?
I watched all four seasons of What We Do in the Shadows within like a 2-week span recently. I hadn't watched any. I had seen the movie and then I just literally was watching like 8 hours of it a day. I'm obsessed with it. It's the funniest thing. It's the most genius TV show of all time, I think.
Yeah. And I wasn't watching it, but I still feel like
I like call him in
every 15 minutes.
Yeah, I'm come look at this scene. Look what she said.
So yeah, you have the couple thing where you're, even if you're not watching a show together, you're still absorbing enough of it because it's happening.
I feel like I watched it and I really enjoyed what I saw of it. So like I'm waiting until, you know, I don't know, I get COVID again or something. So something to like knock me out so I can also like be in bed for 8 hours.
You're in for a treat.
I don't think I was sick. I just
weren't. But
and then we also love Bad Sisters.
We're
have you seen
Bad
that?
Sisters.
It's Sharon Horgan's new show. It's so good and so funny and dark and it's just great.
She's brilliant.
She's so brilliant. And also, you know, we love Catastrophe, but this has like the added sort of like murder mystery element to it. I don't know if you guys have seen like even a trailer or anything.
Oh. I have seen the, you know, thumbnail on the Apple TV thing. It's been recommended to me so many times.
It's literally like, this isn't ruining anything, but it's like in the trailer, but it's basically like five sisters and one of the sisters is married to this asshole and the other sisters are like, let's kill him. And so it's about this.
But you don't know who
did it. So it's a mystery of like how it's done. It's cool.
Awesome.
Great.
So we're in Los Angeles, the Friday, Thursday, after the Emmys.
Yes.
We're all getting over our Emmy fever.
Yes.
How, what were your personal experiences with the broadcast?
I mean, the show itself was brutal, right? I mean, the show was brutal. And like, I used to love watching award shows so much. And now, I mean, I'll still watch the Oscars sort of beginning to end, but pretty much any other award show, I'm just like, I'm in and out, I'm on my phone, and I'm like, what happened to me? Or what happened to award shows? I don't know which.
That opening was like insanely bad. Like just like the dancing to random theme songs. It was so stupid. But I love Shirley Ralph. I mean,
oh yeah.
Like we worked together on a show and I was like such a huge fan of her before that, just because, you know, she's a Broadway legend. And so I literally like screamed, and she just, I mean, that speech was like the best thing of all time.
Yeah, you know? Maybe the all time best award show.
She saved speech. Like, she beautiful. Saved the Emmys this year. Yeah, for that sure. was great. What else?
I mean, Jennifer Coolidge's dance.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Iconic. Sure.
When Jimmy Kimmel slept on stage during Quinta's speech, wasn't that hilarious?
Charming.
So charming.
I was just watching the clip of her on his show where they were just talking about it, and she didn't seem particularly bothered by it, but it just made him look stupid.
Yeah, and I don't understand what the joke was supposed to have been.
It was a bad bit to begin with, and then to sort of like really commit to it, that, I mean, I guess on one hand I'm like, you have to commit to the bit no matter how bad it is, but maybe not at the expense of somebody's moment like that. But
yeah, bit time is over when you have announced the name, and then it's that person's time, and you can like get up and like the bit's done.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought this up, Ben, because like what is it like, why don't we care about awards shows anymore? You know, like the official like Fox News explanation is that everything's too woke and people are rejecting it. And I think that's absurd, because they never haven't been. But like, it's undeniable that people are watching less and less.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just that like we have constant access to famous people and we don't, it's not like the one night a year that we see them out.
Yeah, because I think that is what I still sort of love about award shows is like, and when you see somebody accept an award, it's such a specific, like, vulnerable state to see, you know, somebody to see somebody in. And like, maybe we're just conditioned to see people being too, you know, overexposed or that type of like vulnerability is so sort of like, I don't know, commodified now or something, you know what I mean? Like, it's so, and a lot of it is just sort of,
they're also put so on. Overwritten, I think, with the bits and the it's like they didn't used to be that like produced, I feel like, you know?
I feel like they were always pretty produced, but there was a certain, I don't know, it's also like tough to say, because I feel like when we were watching in the heyday of award shows, I mean, we were all a lot younger, and you know, there was a certain like innocence, and also we were not, you know, in a lot of people's cases, I mean, like, we weren't in the industry yet. I do feel like, at least for me, there, I don't know, some of the shine is not, I don't know, maybe we've seen too much.
Yeah. And the younger generation hasn't replaced us as we've aged out of it, you know, because like, I don't think 20-year-olds or 15-year-olds or whatever care about, you know, whatever, like Brie Larson or whatever. Like, I don't feel like, and it's no knock to her or to them. It's just they have kind of their own ecosystem of celebrities who I don't fucking know who they are.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to watch some of the VMAs recently, and the VMAs were so important to me as a child. You know what I mean? And they were so incredible. But yikes. I mean, like, even the people who I was tuning in to watch, like Nicki Minaj, who I love, but like, I don't know, that performance, that whole thing, I mean, it was brutal.
It felt like everybody was trying to like create a moment,
mm-hmm.
rather than like do a good performance that might accidentally create a moment that people talk about. It was just like everything was so like the Cheech and Chong introducing the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I was like, I want to move out of this country. It's very sad. I had the exact same experience, and obviously that was like a huge part of my life, and now I'm looking at it and I'm like, I say this a lot, but it's like I feel like I'm watching Canadian television. Like, it's like I recognize the language, some of the faces are familiar, but basically it's like people are excited for shit that I don't know.
Yeah, if anybody would understand and appreciate that reference, it's Toronto. Me.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe.
Because that is where I started my career. That's where I met Michael Grassi.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Who sends his love. He's very jealous that he's not here.
I love him.
Yeah. Well, let's go back in time a little bit. When you guys were younger, what were you, other than award shows, what were you watching, or what were your like pop culture obsessions?
I mean, I feel like the first and probably most formative one to me was the Muppets. And specifically, Take Manhattan was the thing that made me want to be a performer. I mean, a Muppet specifically, but once I figured out that that was, you know, not an option, I was like, I guess acting is the next best thing. That, and then, I don't know. I mean, like, I was thinking about this, and I was a pretty precocious kid, and I would just, as I think a lot of gay kids are, you know, and just trying to consume as much adult content as humanly possible.
Sure.
Luckily, I had a grandmother who would sort of like sneak me into R-rated movies and sort of let me rent or read literally whatever I wanted. And
thank God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you were watching the Muppets, were you identifying with the humans who got to be with the Muppets, or were you identifying with, I mean, for me, it was Miss Piggy, I'm assuming.
Yes.
For every good gay man.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely with the Muppets. And specifically, I was thinking about this the other day, how the sort of Miss Piggy Kermit dynamic, that like odd couple dynamic, is the sort of foundation to me of like all great comedy. You know, we have now worked together, and we were developing a show together at one point, and that sort of like introvert, extrovert, you know, odd couple dynamic, I feel like it all goes back for me to them and their sort of like, you know, I want to say borderline abusive. It was fully abusive relationship that they had. But,
it sure is.
Absolutely. Emotionally, physically.
But hilarious.
In all ways. But yeah. So you've had actually the discussion of who's the Miss Piggy and who's the Kermit in your marriage.
It's obvious, but we've not.
Is it obvious?
I don't think we've actually said it. Well, we haven't said it out loud to each other, but you're the Piggy and I'm the Kermit. Absolutely. For sure.
Ben likes, like, he's like a hermit. He doesn't, you know, he likes his alone time, and he... You know, if he goes out more than like once a week, he's like, I'm going crazy. I need to like calm down. It's like, I'm social and want to be around people at all times. And yeah, you know, but I'm also weirdly shy too. So I don't know. I think
you're a Miss Piggy with Kermit tendencies, yes. And I'm the reverse. The
I mean, is this a milestone in the relationship now that it has been spoken? I mean, because there's a before and an after.
Yeah, then this is that moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't thought about that, but I mean, it's pretty obvious in our relationship too. I'm definitely the Piggy to Michael's Kermit, but we're both kind of introverted. It's really more that I'm the one who's thirstier for his affection and attention, and like, he'd be fine without me, you know? And
same, yeah.
The opposite is not true. Yeah.
I'm the Piggy in that when I'm angry, I do karate chops.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you guys remember when Miss Piggy and Cheryl Ladd sang I Enjoy Being a Girl, and they literally bring...
Oh, yes. It's
so incredible. And they bring... Cheryl Ladd has like a karate dummy that she's practicing on, and then Piggy brings in Kermit and literally just, you know... throws him around the room. It's so great. And it's so brutal. Formative. It was so formative to me. That and the Joan Rivers scene in Muppets Take Manhattan.
That one's so good.
With the makeup, he put on the beauty marks for cutie.
The Great Muppet Caper, right?
Yeah. No, that was Muppets Take Manhattan.
Oh, that is Manhattan.
But I mean, oh God, I mean, now you want to get me going on Caper too. Caper is incredible.
That's the one with the synchronized swimming number. Shaped me.
Yes. And Charles Grodin and Diana Rigg. Oh God, it was so good.
And that was like grown-up entertainment for children. I'm sorry, but like,
oh, 100%.
Give me a Muppet, I'm not gonna let go.
I know, which is funny. when I was sort of saying like I was very interested in adult entertainment, and then I was like, you know, literally, I said I was interested in the Muppets and adult stuff, but because I do feel same, like the sense of the sensibility, the sense of humor was very sophisticated.
Absolutely. And that first movie has like a sad ending.
Right.
You know what Muppet I mean? Like, movie. Nobody gets what they want at the end, but it's just like, well, that's life and we'll just keep going.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking such a cool message for kids. Is.
Yeah. And when I see, we've talked about this before, that if, you know, if we ever, if we decide to have a kid, I sort of want to do this sort of like pop cultural dog tooth to them, which will probably really screw them up, which is like just program all of their, you know, the Muppet show. So they think it's like a new show, you know what I mean? So I could, because I feel like now when I like when I went to go see Marcel the Shell recently, which was incredible. Have you guys seen it?
I have not.
Oh my God. It's unbelievable. So talk about like, I mean, it's so funny and sad and like, it's not really a kid's movie. Like, it's very much like the sensibility is like very sophisticated, but I think kids would love it. But I went to go see it. And, you know, when you go see a kid's movie, all the trailers are for other kids' movies and they're so frenetic and like crazy. And it's like kids' attention spans obviously are sort of, you know, obsolete now. So the I'm like, is this what kids like now? I'm like, this seems crazy to me. This seems,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
it's like, I guess it's hard to like hook kids in with slower and more thoughtful stuff, but yeah, they can take it. They mm-hmm. can take it. And it's like, it's good for them. But I guess given the faster option, they'll always take the faster option. That's, I think you should do that, like program that television station now.
It'd be like, it's the only, like, that's all we have is like Mr. Rogers, the Muppets, and like.
Yes. Yeah.
Sesame Street.
It's going to be difficult to set up that infrastructure. So I would get started now. But I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah. 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 They won't be able to relate to any of their peers.
Yeah. Fine. Fine.
So talk us through your high school experiences. Who were you in high school? What was your vibe? What was your scene? I'm going to take a wild swing and guess that you were maybe both friends with the popular girls and that was sort of a,
yeah,
you know, way to move through. I mean, that was my survival method.
I was like dating. I had like a girlfriend all through high school. And so I was, you know, clearly very gay. I was like the president of like the theater club and, you know, went to a, like I was in a performing arts program. And so it was like very gay, but I still was like, I love girls. And so I had a girlfriend, but I was also like kind of a bad high school kid. I was like, you know, taking acid with my friends on weekends. And I grew up in Miami. So it was like, I think about it now. I'm like, where were my parents? Like, they were amazing. But I'm like, there was like 3 years where I was like, I don't even know. I like never was home. I never slept at home. I just was always like, you know, partying on South Beach. And and then would somehow like crawl into school. I got it out of my system early and then stopped doing that when I, you know, moved away. But yeah, it was high school was a weird time because I was like, I went to this school for theater and it was like all I wanted to do. I was like, I knew I wasn't going to go to college. I was like, I'm just here to like do this and then like move to New York or LA. But I think I just was also like the high school part of it was such, I was like, this is a waste of my time. And so I was trying to like, I don't know, distract myself and, you know, with bad drugs. So it was a weird mix of.
You were cool. I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, I was not cool like that.
And that's not cool. Don't do drugs.
No, but
were you a good kid, Ben? What was going on?
I was a good kid. Yeah. I mean, just listening to Blake talk about that, I only ever skipped one afternoon of school.
Oh, God.
Once. And I was meant to meet up with a girlfriend of mine because I was friends with the popular girls, but I went to an all boys private school.
Ah.
So there weren't, that didn't have the kind of currency that you would expect. But the sister school to my high school was like just down the street. And so, yeah, I mean, like from 8:30 to 3:30, I was just trying to sort of like keep my head down, keep a low profile, just like get through the day. Oh yeah. So the only time I ever skipped was I was meant to meet up with a girlfriend from the sister school. And then for whatever reason, she had to bail last minute, but I had already faked sick to get out. So I had like nowhere to go and nothing to do for the afternoon. So I went to go see A View from the Top, the Gwyneth Paltrow flight attendant movie in a theater by myself, just to pass the time. And I wanted to see that movie. I think I was the only person in the theater. So that was my one sort of like bad kid school skipping experience.
I think in 10th grade, like I skipped so many days that my mom had to like bribe our assistant principal. Like she like, right. I remember she like bought her like a nice bag or something to be like, you have to pass my son. Cause yes. I just like skipped too much school.
Yeah. See, I was always present, but I wasn't present, if you know what I mean. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Where was this all boys private school?
In Toronto.
Toronto.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was.
Was it religiously affiliated or no?
Religiously? No. No, it wasn't. You know, I went to Catholic elementary school before that, but yeah.
And when did Degrassi come along?
I was way too old to be on Degrassi. I was not high school age. I was 24 when I did that show. And I only did like 7 episodes of it, but it was a pretty, it was a great gig. And Michael wrote, I think created my character, Bobby Breckenridge, who was the abusive boyfriend to the character Fiona, played by Annie Clark.
He literally pushes her down like a
flight of stairs.
But it's like a like one of those,
like a spiral,
like a really wraparound staircase. And this like tiny girl like tumbles for like 6 minutes down these
slides. Because it's funny because Annie, well, if you really look at it, I mean, Annie was a very petite girl, but her stunt double was not. And so immediately she is just like, as soon as they cut to the wide shot, it's like this very butch stunt woman wearing like a terrible like curly wig. It's hilarious if you watch it back.
That's amazing.
But yeah, so that was that. I was 24. I think I had auditioned for Degrassi a couple times earlier, and I was starting to have a bit of a complex about the show because it really is a kind of a stepping stone for a lot of, you know, young Canadian actors. And then I did a play actually with a bunch of Degrassi actors, and that kind of got me in there. And then I got that role, and yeah, it was a great experience. I still get like, you know, tweets and DMs about that role. And I only, you know, I was only on for like 7 or 8 episodes,
but memorable, evil.
But that show's powerful, as you know.
Oh yes. It's still with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get into your meet cute as a couple, but before that, what were your dating lives like?
I didn't date very many guys. Like, I literally had a serious boyfriend when I turned like 21 for like 4.5 years. And then we broke up and I met Ben like within the year. So I have a very small dating history, but Ben was a slut.
That's not.
Oh, great.
I remember we were, like, my first time we went to Toronto, we were like walking through
My mom might listen to this
the gay
podcast.
Village, and he was like, oh, I like hooked up with someone there. This club, it was the first time and I was like,
okay.
It was like a tour of his like sexual experiences. It was very eye opening.
Those are important to have.
Yeah,
I mean, what was your version of that, Blake? You were you freshly out when you met your first serious boyfriend?
Very fresh. Yeah, I came out when I was like 21 and met him within that year, and it was like I literally just kissed a guy once before I came out. So I was so inexperienced, and it was a wonderful 4 years. Like, he's a great guy, but it was just like I just didn't know what I wanted. I was so, you know, naive to the gay experience. And it was but yeah, so then we dated for a while, and then it didn't work out. And then I was like, oh my god, I get to have my like time to be like to go like hook up with guys. And like I literally like think I went on a couple dates with this one guy who was super cute and great, and then like that nothing happened. And then like 2 weeks later I met Ben, and I was like, oh, this was supposed to be my like sexual awakening. I was supposed to like, you know, get to be a slut for once in my life. And then I met Ben.
So, sorry.
Yeah. And here we are like 12 years later. And
meanwhile, Ben, you were whoring around every corner.
No, I mean, like I started kissing boys when I was 16, but it was not like a heart stopper, you know, experience. I was like sneaking into gay clubs with.
Wait, tell that. It's the best story of all. It's so ridiculous.
Oh, now we're setting it up. Is the best story of all time. When I was 16, I snuck into a gay. This is where I had my first gay kiss. Was at a club, at like a sketchy club in Toronto that would, you know, take my fake ID and my girlfriend's fake IDs. And so we snuck in, and literally the first guy who like laid eyes on me, who, you know, came, walked up and talked to me, I was like, I'm in love. And he was, he was 24 years old and he had braces. And not that there's anything wrong with that.
But, I had them until I was 22.
But a full mouth. And he took me, we went up to this little sort of like back room area. I don't even know. I feel like it was like a, maybe like a coat room or something. And we made out and, you know, it was electric. And afterwards he, I mean, obviously I lied and I said, I was like, I don't know what I said. I think I said I was like 19 or 20. And he asked for my phone number and I was so just sort of like euphoric and not thinking, this was before I even had a, I didn't have a cell phone at the time. Like we're, I'm like aging myself now, but I was like, I didn't have a cell phone. So without a thought, I just gave him my home phone number and I was very much closeted. So, and I was drunk. And then I went home, went to bed, didn't really think anything of it because I was drunk. And then I woke up the next morning. My mom came into my room probably around like, I don't know, like 9 or 10 and told me that there was a voicemail for me on the the family answering machine.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And so I listened to it. And, you know, it was basically him just like saying, I mean, it was not, it's not that he said it. Well, he basically was just like, hey, Ben, it was so nice to meet you. Like, I had such a good time with you last night. Call me. This is my number, whatever. So it wasn't anything like crazy incriminating. Okay, okay. It wasn't overly incriminating, but he sounded very gay. And my mom was like, who is that? Like, what, who? And I lied through my teeth, as I did every time that I was confronted with, you know, something clearly gay. And it happened on many, many occasions. I just lied through my teeth and told my mom that he was just a guy that I met at a party who was interested in my friend Ella and wanted to hook up with Ella.
She's like, he sounds like
Ella. Oh, and then I called him. So I told, I lied. And then I called him back sort of in a panic. And he was like, hey, how's it going? And I was like, hey, so I'm sorry. I made a mistake. I should never have given you this number. Please don't ever call me again. It was harsh. It was harsh. And he said to me, one of these days, you're going to grow up and you're going to realize that you can't go around acting like a little prostitute. And he hung up on me.
Well, okay.
Yeah. And you were like, just you wait. Yeah. I will be acting like a little prostitute. No.
So that was my first kiss. my first gay kiss, I should say. And then I don't know, I feel like I had a pretty normal sort of like dating life until I actually didn't. Blake was my first like serious boyfriend. Like we were 24. I was 24 when we met. And very commitment phobic. And, you know, if any guy, I think my longest relationship was 2 months. Any guy who wanted to see me more than once a week, I was like, you're suffocating me.
Mm.
So it wasn't really until Blake came along and sort of bullied me into a serious relationship that really shifted. And here we are 12 years
later. I forgot to mention, speaking about first kiss, my first kiss with a guy, so before I like really came out, was my manager at Abercrombie and Fitch.
What?
Right.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
That took
a turn.
At the Third Street Promenade. He was also like, we were like the same age, but he was like the manager. You know, they had like kids running that store or whatever. But it was like, it was so gay. Like thinking back, we were in like.
But what a badge of honor that you worked at Abercrombie.
Oh, sure.
Incredible.
I mean, you know, as we now know, they did not hire everyone.
I mean, to be
they did not.
To be fair, you were a merchandiser. You were not.
Yeah, I did not. No, it was like we did. I like refused to. Yeah, it wasn't like regular working in the store. It was like me and this girl, Erica, like did the windows. I was like the gayest person there. Like literally, I was like dressing mannequins.
Are we talking about the years when you would go to Abercrombie and Fitch and hear like Ben Harper? Or was it just when they just gave it up and it was just Full House music?
It was absolutely Full House music. It was okay, cool. Horrible. Mm. Yeah. It was the worst. And it smelled so intense.
Right, because didn't they
smell of wood?
They pumped the cologne through the air vent, didn't they?
Yeah, called like Fierce, I think it was called, or something.
Oh, these are the Fierce years. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fierce is back, I think. They have some legacy products they're rolling out.
Oh, good. Wow. Good to
know. I'm tempted to get it because I was a big Fierce fan.
I have to say that since we watched that Netflix documentary, it's like started showing up in my algorithm. Like I'm starting to get like targeted ads for Abercrombie. And I'm like, guys, that was not a, it was not a flattering portrayal of the brand.
Yeah. All publicity is not good publicity. Can we, Ben, can we take you back to the cloakroom for a moment?
Oh yeah. Sure.
I'm not ready to let this go.
Yeah.
I need to know what song was playing when you had your first kiss in it.
Oh my God. I mean, so if I was 16, we're talking the year, 2001. So, which was really, again, sort of peak VMA, peak Britney, Christina, sure. You know, J-Lo, Destiny's Child, could have been any one of those. I don't really, sure. I don't remember the soundtrack because I think I was so just, I just remember that the cloakroom was next to a little, like they had like a little sort of gift shop almost in this gay club where they were selling like, you know, butt plugs and poppers and stuff.
Wait,
and
really? So,
yes. That's all I remember is I remember sort of like making out and like with one in the corner of my eye, just seeing like, you know, sex toys.
Which, by the way, more gay clubs should do.
Yeah, I think it's smart.
Yeah. And when you lied to your mother and family, was this convincing to them or?
My mom also, you know, on different occasions found gay pornography on more than one occasion. And every time I would lie and every
time. Blame it on Elena again.
Elena, but like various girlfriends. I remember she found, there was a gay pornographic magazine that my one of my girlfriends had bought me for my birthday and had inscribed on the cover, and my mom presented me with it and she was like, why would Carrie buy you this? And I was like, she's obsessed with gay guys, mom. She's obsessed and she like wants me to be gay. Like what can I say? And she just sort of, I mean, so denial dark. It's dark. It's like denial. Denial is very powerful.
It is.
Your mom was like, God, your girlfriends are wild bunch.
No, like complete degenerates, all of my girlfriends. Like, you know, she found cigarettes one time. I blame that on my friend Jess. You know, it was like they were a total scapegoat for everything.
So you both started acting like pretty youngish. And I mean, I know it wasn't even that long ago, but like the moment that we're in where the industry to a certain degree is, you know, kind of allowing people to embrace their identities, but like it's still a relatively new thing. Mm-hmm. And I imagine, you know, in terms of like, how out am I going to be? It was a different, you know, quandary back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was never in the closet professionally, but I also, you know, for the first many years of my career was working in Canada, where I feel like it's more, you know, we don't really have a star system there, to be honest. And like, you know, I think there's like a little bit less pressure. And then by the time I moved out here, I was like, I've been out for so long, it was not even a question. But you had
with
a
me,
sort
it was
of different
like,
experience.
Yeah, it was like, my first, you know, job in this industry was on, you know, recurring on Parks and Recreation, where I was playing a gay guy. So it was like, that was like the start of my career. And then it was like, and I was out to all of my friends and, you know, but I wasn't like, nobody gave a shit who I was. So it's like, I didn't need to be like, I'm out or in. But then like my first like big job was on this network show called Mixology. And I was playing like the lead like straight guy who was like, you know, pining after the pretty girl. And I felt a lot of pressure, not like nobody said I had to do this, but I just, in my head, I thought like, I'm playing this role, like I'm going and doing talk shows and doing all of these things. And this is like, this moment in my life is the biggest, it's everything I've ever wanted, was to like be on a TV show, and I'm getting this opportunity. And I felt such a responsibility to like all of the other actors to just like represent the show in the way I thought was I should.
Yeah, because it was a show that was all about millennial dating, but notably there was not a single gay character on it, right?
Frankie's was kind of gay, but yeah. Anyways, kind of gay, not fully. So anyways, so I was like, I just was like, I'm not gonna talk about my my personal life, and I talked to the PR people, and I just said, like, I don't want to like talk about dating or, and Ben and I had been together at this point for a handful of years, and it was a major strain on our relationship, because thinking back now, I'm like, I feel so shitty, because, you know, I would go on like talk shows and they'd ask me about my personal life or, you know, my dating life, and I was just lying, and it was so gross. And yeah, it was really shitty. And it was also shitty because like everyone that I worked with like also knew Ben. So it just felt like, it felt so false. And so it was this weird moment where it was like the best time of my life, because I was getting to act and be the lead of a TV show. And it was life changing. But at the same time, it was so depressing because I was lying every day. And really nothing good came out of that. Like, you can't lie. Like, there's just no point. Like, the second I was like, after that, like, it caused a lot of conflict in Ben and I's relationship. And, you know, we talked a lot about it. And I was just like, he was like, I can't do that again. Like, you can't, on your next show, like, this can't happen again, because it's the worst feeling. I mean, right? Like,
yeah, it was just, I mean, like, I understood why you were doing it. I understood that the pressure that you were under at the time, but it what really affected me. Like, mm-hmm. it was really hurtful to me. And I was just like bursting into tears like all the time. And I don't think I really even fully understood why.
Yeah. It was dark. It was a dark time. But once I like on my next show, I was like, just like to the PR people, I was like, just, you know, like I have a fiance. At the time we were engaged, and it was just, I have a fiance, I have a dog, we live together. I was like, I want to be like transparent and out and open, and like only good came from that, you know. And it was like there was like our relationship was better for it. Like, I still play straight characters, I still play gay characters, like, it doesn't matter, you know what I mean? Like, no, I realized like, oh, nobody really cares. Like, it was such a lesson to like and whenever I talk to like, you know, queer actors that are starting, I'm like, look, because like people have literally asked me that, like, do you think it's important? I'm like, do not, like, you can't walk around every day with that on your shoulders, like hiding this thing. Like, just, you know, you're not going to be happy, and you're not going to enjoy it. Anything
that's, I think, that detrimental to your mental health and well-being is not going to serve you creatively or in any way, you know?
Yeah. So it was a...
But you had no one to tell you that, you know, like,
right, sure.
What you guys did is like brand new, you know? So it does matter to the people who are, you know, who are coming up now, who can like see you and see your success and be like, okay, I can, you know, actually like be open from the start and save myself some anxiety.
Yeah. And like, yeah. I mean, we, you know, we're good friends with Jesse Tyler Ferguson and Justin Makita, and like, even I talked to him and them a lot about it, you know. It was like, and it's, even though they're friends, like, they are role models in to us. And I think as you know, just they've done it so well. I think Jesse like handled, you know, he just was never in, you know, and like, I think he just did it really well. I don't know.
And actually, my number one role model when I was a kid, besides the Muppets, was Rupert Everett. Who, you know, like when I saw my best friend's wedding, I was like, I remember, I think I was like 10 at the time. And I was just like, oh, this guy is having more fun than anyone. Mm. And he's himself. And I remember it didn't even occur to me at the time that he might be gay in real life. Cause I was like, people aren't, I don't know if you guys had this experience, but when I was a kid, I was like, the people aren't actually, I mean, I know it's a thing that exists, but it didn't feel like a tangible thing that you could be. Mm. And I remember getting this Us magazine, you know, back when Us was Us.
Back when Us was Us.
And there was a story about him in it. And I remember reading it, and he was openly gay and was talking about it. And I remember it just like blew my mind. And I think honestly, from then on, I was just like, even though, you know, he's since been pretty outspoken about like the toll that sort of, you know, being out probably took on his career. Yeah. I was kind of like, well, you know, if he can do it, and that, like, I knew how much like I respected that and how much it meant to me. So it was like, you know, if he can do it, I can do it. Like, that's how I want to be and how I want to live from a very young age. So, it really does just sort of show you the impact that kind of, bravery and visibility can have.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very thoughtful Kermit response to the whole thing.
Classic Kermit response. Kermit.
It's classic Kermit.
And what year did you guys get married?
2016.
Okay.
Okay, so
it's been a while. Legal.
Yeah.
Fresh-ish, yes. But yeah, I mean, compared to me, you are veterans of the marriage industrial complex. You've obviously overcome your share of challenges. Any words of wisdom for folks like me who might be, newly married, thinking about longevity?
Couples therapy.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good answer.
I think that's been.
It's actually funny sitting here in front of a laptop because normally when we do it, it's for couples therapy. But yeah.
I'd like to think of this as an additional session.
It is. I feel very soothed. But
it's good and bad. It's like, to just have that consistent and consistency and just put in the work. It's like, I think that's been.
And it can be tough. Really, it can be tough to sort of like pull the trigger on it, I think, unless you're sort of like in crisis. Mm-hmm. I think when we first started going, it was because we sort of needed a mediator or some sort of intervention. But I think as soon as we started doing it, we were like, God, we probably should have done this. We probably should have done this years ago, and it would have helped. But, everybody comes to it in their own time. And I think for me, I think that I thought that if we started couples therapy, it meant that we were inherently, broken, or mm-hmm. that we had real problems, that I would have to face the fact that we had real problems. And that's really not the case. It's just,
it's like teaches you how to communicate with each other. And yeah, I feel like now we like talk through everything, and it's just,
yeah,
it's helped so much. It's helped. Yeah, it's great. So couples therapy would be the advice.
I'd like your therapist number.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because you're obviously doing something right. Blake Lee and Ben Lewis, what a pleasure. Thank you for doing this. I'm sure anyone who's listening to this is already following you, but just in case, tell people where they can find you.
I'm only on Instagram, Blake Lee Blake. Yeah.
And I'm on Instagram and Twitter, though I rarely use it, at Ben Lewis here.
That's it. Yeah.
Thank you
guys so much for being here.
This was so fun.
Thank you for having me.